Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds, episode 460.
It feels weird, Graham.
Really does.
Yeah, it feels like we've gone 10 years back in time. Why is that? Because we're back in the garage.
We're back in the garage. They're shooting some crazy thing at ATC, so we're not in the ATC World Headquarters. We are back in the garage. There are stacks of T-shirts. There is now, instead of a weight bench, there is a treadmill.
Yes. You know, well, times have changed. My
Your powerlifting days
are
over.
Yeah, my exercise needs have matured. eventually, there'll be a yoga studio in here.
I don't know. I think, Chris, you need to go back to just powerlifting.
Just powerlifting?
Just bulk up. Just meat. Protein.
Yep. And let's go to Venice.
Yeah, go to Venice. Always talking about aminos and recovery drinks, and that's what I want to hear from you.
And just start yelling, one more set, come on.
Yeah, feel the burn. Yeah. I want to hear that. I want to hear you say those things.
Come on, push it.
Come on. Come on, bro.
Yeah.
I want to hear you say bro.
You can do it. Come on, bro.
Thing
come
is,
on.
You gotta wear an adult diaper when you deadlift now. Yeah. It's just not worth it. It's not worth the risk.
I'm on board with all those things.
Yeah, you know, it's something to explore for sure.
So we're back in the garage with a guest that we love that we've had on the show numerous times that has also done some business with you.
Yes.
I made that sound creepy.
Yeah.
Either that or you
guys.
I was on one of them too.
Now,
we worked together on the set.
That's right. Sounds like we were involved in a heist. That's what I made it sound like.
Yep.
We took care of that thing from that guy.
Yeah. And no, we don't talk about it. So, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, comedian, writer, provocateur, Rick Overton.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And Rick and Graham both did an episode of Conversations from the Abyss.
Super
called
fun.
Did the Operative.
You as well.
Thank you.
And then Rick's got another little part coming up on the final episode of this season, Conversations from the Abyss. I won't give anything away, but the episode is called Father, about a grieving man who befriends a ghost in a graveyard.
Mm-hmm. All right. Who plays what? We gotta wait.
You'll have to wait. Not to see, but to hear. You'll have to leave it up to your own imagination.
So, now, Rick, the last time I saw you live, I brought my son to see you because this was such a cool thing. When you mentioned it, I'm like, well, is he kidding or is he actually doing this? You were part of a troupe that was in a library recreating H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. And I thought it was fantastic.
Thanks. It was really from the Radio Hour.
Yeah, from the Radio Hour. Yeah. And
Orson Welles's
Mercury,
Orson Welles,
Theater.
Mercury Theater.
Oops, wrong Welles. Sorry.
one Welles to another.
Yes.
That's right.
I was like trying to explain to my son as we were listening, like, no, people just, they didn't have screens. They just listened to the radio. This was entertainment. And this is the only way they would also get news, so they were freaking out thinking it was real. And then there was a woman in the front row who was alive back then and remembered that happening. That was really cool.
That must have been like, imagine, I it's so hard for us to even put it in any sort of context today that could happen. You know what I mean?
Well, people were coming out of, you know, just beginning to really see that there might be some hope for America, but they're in a very fragile place coming out of a depression. And so they're already kind of, people were kind of traumatized by all that. They're right on the edge. And that's when things, when they snap, they really snap. And so, you know, thank God it was regional radio.
Right.
You know, its radius was not the entire nation.
It wasn't syndicated.
Yeah, right. I don't think it was it? I think it was just an area, right? Just an East Coast area radius? Well, yeah. And my grandmother remembered hearing about it and all that. My mom told stories about it and said that no one in the neighborhood was really all that freaked out, but they're, you know, there are stupid people that might be living right next to you and you don't know.
Yeah. That is very true. You never know where they're going to crop up.
Yeah.
Stupid people.
Yeah. Honey, yeah, well, what are the Martians about? I don't know. They went to a commercial. Well, if they went to a commercial, you know.
Better get the gun.
Yeah. Well, while they're getting the gun, I got to pee. But tell me if the Martians come on. Jeez.
Well, now, are you doing any more of those? Because that was a, you were doing, it was like,
well, I would, no word on that. No word. But okay. Yeah, there's always next Halloween.
Yes.
That's right.
And I will come back again.
I'd be great to see you.
Yeah, yeah. But it was it was one of those things, too, that I was looking around, and it was mostly older people in the audience. But honestly, there would have been a lot of students and kids that would have really enjoyed this, like just on the Halloween alien invasion. You know, you take away the historical and cultural aspect of it, but just the story alone would have been really interesting. Like, I feel like that's the kind of thing that libraries need to do more of,
right?
And promote it and get more people in there to enjoy culture, history, science fiction, all of these things that are, you know, not on a screen and Insta or hidden, well, or apps.
Especially too, since like, you know, your podcast and others like it, Welcome to Night Vale or whatever, are doing this more old style radio play, long form scripted podcast. I mean, all you're doing is a radio play.
Pretty much, yeah.
That is just downloadable that you can listen to whenever you want. So they should really try to capitalize on that more, because there is definitely an audience of podcast listeners.
Yeah.
That would gladly come to a thing like this, because it's a live podcast. You're just coming to a live podcast. Yeah. Like,
they had sound effects, music, all the stuff was just, you know, you had one guy on the computer and hitting buttons, and you heard everything too, along with the voices.
He's just right there.
All right.
So, all right.
It's like watching Foley, but still enjoying the crunch and the bang and the honk.
That's cool.
So, well, it was a big weekend over the weekend because Us came out and shattered box office expectations.
Really?
Yeah, it made apparently way more money than they expected it to, because I really felt like, you know, the expectations were, it's a follow-up, it's not going to do as well as Get Out, it is a horror movie, it'll do okay, but it did really well. Now, it did help that there was really no other competition. It's not like an Avengers movie came out the same weekend. There was a
great
lot of
release
room.
Strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really, they're waking up to this. And I think we talked about it before, but what Black Panther did last year, releasing in February and staying in the theaters forever, getting Oscar nominations, everyone's realizing that this like old model of like,
get out of the fur ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Avoid the big fight. A second, they're all just laying on the dirt. Vroom, you screech up.
Yep. It's the smartest thing, because it went up against nothing.
Right.
And it
very
did,
smart.
Apparently $71 million is what it did.
Yeah, and you know it didn't cost that to make.
The budget was 20.
Right, exactly.
Very good.
So that's,
you know, so whenever you see Jason Blum's name in the credits, you know that budget is not going to go very high. Like, that's his entire business model. It's like he does these horror movies. You keep the budget low.
Does all right, though. He's got a great effects team, and that's so much of what, you know, and then the stories and the scripts. You can get those two things. It doesn't always have to be. It's just because sometimes you use more of an unknown cast. That keeps the
every the, once the in a while you get an Ethan Hawke in one of his movies, but
sure. But he's using new people
90% of the time. It
was Lupita Nyong'o and a bunch of no names.
Right.
She was the only name person in the whole thing.
Yeah, so
there's
Moss.
The budget chunk right
Elizabeth
there.
Elizabeth Moss, right. Yeah. But she was. Yeah. Elizabeth Moss had a small part.
Exactly. And you also look at, like, you know, the. Like you said, the roles are small. You know, they weren't getting giant paychecks. It's like. So it makes sense. I mean, it's the horror version of what Adam Sandler used to do with Happy Madison. You know, you would keep these comedy budgets low, and then you would make tens of millions of dollars.
I like this movie. There's definitely some spots that were a little.
Before we get into it, I want to mention this. Jordan Peele did something really interesting, and this is what makes me really like him as a horror filmmaker, because it isn't just somebody. It's not like. Gwyneth Paltrow doing Country Strong. Like, I want to do a country music movie. Right. I'm like, really? So Jordan Peele is clearly a horror fan and has been for many, many years. He actually gave the cast 10 horror movies to watch so they would all have a shared language when filming. Dead Again, The Shining, The Babadook, It Follows, A Tale of Two Sisters, The Birds, Funny Games, Martyrs, Let the Right One In, and The Sixth Sense. Now, if you look at this list, it is wide and varied as far as horror and thriller go. And I haven't even seen all the movies on this list. So, you know, there is a deep appreciation for the genre in there. And it comes through in the film, for sure.
It absolutely comes through. And I think this is the mark of a good filmmaker. I was in the beginning, some of the dialogue was feeling a little clunky for me, and I was like, uh-oh, is this a sophomore slump thing, that which we've talked about can happen?
Right.
Somebody spent their first movie, they've had it for years, they've worked on it, it's their whole life, and then the next one just has to be cranked out.
Right.
Because the first one was success. So I was like, uh-oh, is that what happened here? I don't think so. I think overall it's a really good movie. Lupita Nyong'o, she's fantastic in it,
yeah,
playing the two different versions. Mm-hmm. And this tells me that this makes sense. First of all, it's good directing to give your cast homework.
Right.
And also to speak the same, because he's like, I need you to know my... So when I say, you remember that scene in Birds?
Right.
It's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really, the scenes where there was tension, and it was really, he does a great job.
I say he's the new Hitchcock for suspense.
Yeah.
He captures negative space better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the stillness of a horror moment, as opposed to you have to, yeah, film school told you, keep going all over the place with the camera to keep us interested. When you do action camera for suspense, you kill suspense.
That's a great point. And I think, yeah, it's such a great point. And that's why he's not, why, you know, he loves this genre. He's not like, oh, I guess I should do this because it's horror. What, quick cuts and all that. He did the tension, mm-hmm, the music.
Master of tension.
The master of tension. That was Hitchcock.
Well,
and he's the new Hitchcock.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Even the way the movie was released, like when you saw that trailer, you were like, what the hell is going on?
What is this? Yeah.
And as the movie unfolded, like as that tension increased, you really didn't know where it was going. Like at some point, like, you know, when the untethered, as they're called, that show up in the driveway at the house. Now, this is not a spoiler. There's a lot of stuff that happens in this movie. We won't get into spoilers, although we may do a spoiler ep, but we won't get into any spoilers. They, you know, obviously they invade the house and see the family. I honestly thought, well, I wonder if this is going to be the rest of the movie, is them just being in this house with this family.
Right, and, tormented.
And tormented by them, and that's it. Like, and the movie plays with your expectations where you don't know where it's going to go. And I liked it. And I remember talking to somebody this weekend who saw it, and they said, yeah, wasn't really what I thought it was going to be. And I'm thinking, but that's okay. That's not a bad thing. Like, if a movie surprises you and goes in a different direction, especially if a trailer gives you no clue as to where it's going to go, just go along for the ride.
Right.
It's okay. Just let it take you where it wants to go. And this movie did go into some interesting places. You know, we don't want to give anything away, but it was...
That's a trick. I don't know what to say here,
I know,
man.
It's,
you know,
tough.
It just opened. I have thoughts I have to sit on completely, yeah, right now. Just, I think, I don't want to do a spoiler on anything, you know. Mm-hmm. So I have to withhold some opinions, things.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought he captures. Did you ever see? There was another movie with a recent film. Was it Mandy? Was it called?
Oh, with Nicolas Cage.
With Nick Cage.
Oh no, I've heard so much about this.
And
movie.
There are long suspense, weird creep holds on, mm-hmm, shots. It was like Lynchian, you know. And
right.
So I was going to say the other guy that had suspense for a bit was Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when he was working with Hopper and stuff like that, he was very good at building on up to things in the craziest,
yeah,
overt way. It wasn't as,
right,
subtle as Hitchcock, but it was doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think
sure.
That's a great point too. And one of the things that Lynch, as you mentioned with Hopper, but Hitchcock really catered his suspense to the acting abilities of the stars that he used. I thought Hitchcock, that's one of his amazing strengths, and mm-hmm, building it around that person, either as them as the creepy person or showing how scared they are. And in this case, it was Lupita Nyong'o showing her like scared as the mom. And then the tethered one was so creepy, the way,
right,
she moved.
Are we allowed to say this part yet?
Yeah, this is still, it's in the trailer and the setup.
The trailer,
yeah,
stuff.
It's set up? In,
yeah,
the trailer?
It's,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's
there's doubles that are of the family that come in.
We can say this part.
Yeah,
yes, because in the trailer they go, oh my God, it's us.
It's us, yeah.
They say that in the trailer.
And they establish why. They give that part. Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Yeah, that part I'm sort of...
Not how we got why. but we at least see the basic why there's the title.
We see why there's a title, that it's they're being haunted by themselves.
Right.
So, right. And I think this is what Jordan Peele does a great job of, because it's really the movie, so much of it is on Lupita's shoulders, which is, she's a fantastic actress, and she plays two totally different people that are the same,
right?
Which is not easy to do, and she really pulled it off. And again, any of the sort of like, ah, this doesn't make sense, or that they, that's a little, there's a little bit of a hole here or there, I was like, huh. But then I'd be right back into some suspense scene, and I was like, I'm fine.
I felt the same way. Like, as the movie progressed, I was like, well, that, I may have a logic problem with that. That doesn't make sense. If that's, if A is true and B is true, you know, if we put those together, why isn't C true? Now it doesn't quite make sense. Yeah, like, you, like this, this doesn't quite mesh together. Yeah, yeah, that doesn't quite line up as the puzzle pieces are supposed to. I thought, but the movie was so well crafted and so well made, I was able to forgive kind of these moments of like logic puzzles, maybe.
Just some creep, and just
There was a lot of really interesting things in the movie. I felt it did get a little too kitchen sinky, like we're trying to put this idea in the movie. I understand you're trying to explore all these different ideas and themes, and there's a lot of allegory and there's a lot of metaphor in the film, especially with kind of the marginalized society and people like that. Like, but here's the one thing I really liked about the movie, and Jordan Peele could have so easily gotten pigeonholed in this. It's like, well, it's another black horror movie. It's like, and that could have been like, because that's what Hollywood does. You made a successful black horror movie, just make another black horror movie, and then about race, because you did that, that was good, it worked, and it made us money, so make another one of those. And thank God, you know, he was probably like, look, I'm not making Get Out 2, I'm gonna make another movie. And this movie was a horror movie with a black family as the leads. This was not a black horror movie, and that's what was so good. Now, I did think there was a little bit of too much effort on making the white family a little too entitled and annoying. I think that was a little forced. I'm like, okay, we got it. Yeah.
Hi, I'm white guy.
Hi, yeah. I'm Archie type.
Yes.
Well, that was the thing in the beginning.
And I'm going to be insufferable.
Well, that was the one
part. But it was hilarious, though. Yeah. They were hilarious. Elizabeth was great.
There was some funny stuff in there, but I thought like the dialogue, even between the black family and the white, a lot of their dialogue was just felt a little cliche-ish, two dimensional, and maybe, I don't know, maybe that was like by design. He was just like, I want them to sound like the dialogue in
the archetypes, like
the archetype in the horror movies always just have the archetype.
Yeah,
right. I'm the jock, I'm the cheerleader, and I'm gonna get murdered first.
And I wasn't laughing too much to worry about it. I was kind of laughing my ass off and all that stuff there. I'm kind of comfortable where I am.
Yeah. So it's like if that worked for you, but even then, right as I was starting to go like Lupita Nyong'o's husband, I was like, yeah, this guy's character, I don't know. But then it got interesting and I was in.
Right.
You know, so, and I guess it's sort of that thing that in an action movie and in a horror movie, I can forgive some of that stuff as long as the action or the horror and the tension is
exactly good, right. You know? Yeah.
The women were the most frightening, dangerous creatures in it.
Yes.
Right.
Because when he switched over, he was still the big goof version of the guy, you know? Right. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the fun, though.
Right.
Because he could fuck up as that guy a lot, which is, you know, I don't want to say anymore. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was really fun. It was very busy story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of standing there and explaining. And it takes a real actor to nail that. And she did. Because there was some expository going on there.
Right.
And she just crushed it as that spirit creature, whatever, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was
doppelganger.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I think he's a really solid film. He understands the horror genre and how to. I mean, this message wasn't really about race; it was more about class.
Yes.
You know, and he did a good job of that because both families...
And no one mentioned the word race either.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everyone just... And it was about class. It was about you guys have what is better than us. Mm-hmm. Your lives are better. And why? You know? And it was like...
And there was a couple things, too, where I thought, well, that part was probably added at the end. Like, there's some opening cards at the beginning of the movie that talk about the sewers and the tunnels under the entire country. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, is that really necessary that we need to mention that? And I'm like, well, that's going to come back later, I'm sure. And that's
or he's trying to put a MacGuffin in there.
Right, right.
Mm. If he's trying to be... That's what I was wondering. I was like, is this a very obvious MacGuffin?
Yeah,
Is he really trying to like...
Yeah. So, or are we setting something up or what, you know, and that's fine. It was the kind of thing where I really felt like that was a studio note. Like, look, you got to put something in the beginning. People aren't going to understand that there's tunnels underneath the ground. I'm like, really? People aren't going to understand that? I think we could figure it out. Yeah, there's subways. Yeah. We've seen them. Yeah. We've seen escalators.
And it's an allegory for things that have been underground that are surfacing now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's important, I think, in these times. You know?
Mm-hmm. And
so it has a message.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, to me, I was like a bubbling, there's a bubbling up.
Cauldron, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A violent thing.
Yeah.
So, and I will say this too, and this is what also Peele understands. If you had a horror movie full of allegories without horror, it'd be the most boring thing in the world. Nobody would care. You have to service the horror first, and then you want to make commentary after that. And that's
Romero.
Yeah, it's true with any genre, any genre, science fiction, horror, drama, even comedy. You want to get a point across. You have to do it within the confines of the genre and make it entertaining first, and then you layer on the metaphors under that. So, and that's like, because there were scenes in this movie, like, that just were like really creepy and just really, and what I liked about it too, is I'm watching it and you never know on a movie like this, because it's so well put together, how creepy or how violent it's going to be. Because especially when it's a slow burn, like with a slasher movie, someone gets killed in the beginning in a creative way, you know, you're probably going to see more of that in the next hour and a half. Mm. It's not going to be a surprise when another kid gets killed at a camp, at a sleepaway camp. But for a movie like this that unfolded very slowly and gradually with, you know, a lot of kind of hanging and gnawing doubts that as the viewer you're watching, like, well, something bad's going to happen, but I have no idea what it's going to be or how it's going to play out. When you do that as a filmmaker, when the creepiness and the extreme violence actually happens, it's more shocking and more terrifying.
You can wear that out. That's like an entree made of seasoning.
Right? Yeah.
With a tiny little bit of steak in the middle of it, you know?
Yeah.
And just powder and herbs all around it. Yeah. And you went in the opposite direction. You're supposed to mostly... Mm-hmm. Keep us on the ride with the same feelings, you know, that you want the reactions for. Because when you do the wrong cuts, you're wrecking all the reactions you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I think the scariest thing, and he figured it out, is not some rubber monster that we know is 4 hours in a makeup chair. Now we've seen all the specials. Is human behavioral change?
Yeah,
and it's the same kind of thing that was Possession of Joel Delaney was terrifying for that reason. Let's Scare Jessica to Death was terrifying for that reason. Rosemary's Baby was terrifying. Everyone suddenly behaviorally changes around you because I can't relate to some big
The Exorcist
constructed monster, but I can relate to people whose behavior has changed. You know,
the creepiest one of the creepiest scenes in all horror movies is the Exorcist where she does that crab walk spider thing
with the head the wrong way.
Oh my god, that was horrifying.
Right, and looking right at you with a smiling face, you know, like, it wants you to see.
It was like, and now he did a lot of stuff, especially like with the kids. I won't get into that, the specifics, but it was really cool. And the other thing too is like the Lost Boys took place at Santa Cruz Beach, and so that was very deliberate.
Right.
And there was even a scene where there's in 1986 on Santa Cruz Beach, the move opened, and he goes, you know, they're shooting a movie over there by the
camera. Right. Yeah, they referenced that they were shooting Lost Boys over at the, over the 80s, that movie, which was really cool. So I really like this movie. I think, you know, the issues I had with it, I don't want to get into because they're better served at a spoiler because I don't want to give away any film because it's definitely...
I'm struggling with it, man.
It's the kind of film you really need to go into with as little information as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just if I could put it up in a nutshell, it's really good. It's got great commentary. There are some issues with logic here and there, and there's, like I said, the ending gets a little kitchen sinky, but these are these complaints can be forgiven.
And if I've spoken too much, maybe review this and cut some of that out.
No, there's nothing.
Spoil anything for the fans.
It's a fun ride. Mm-hmm. It does. A horror movie is a fun ride. It's you're supposed to scream and get a little like creeped out.
Yeah,
And it did that.
You're supposed to feel.
Yeah. It did a great job of that.
It defies analysis sometimes, but you do feel.
Mm-hmm.
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 Mission accomplished. You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Impressive follow-up.
Yeah, it is, man. Yes. The guy's made two solid movies.
Yeah. And music soundtrack.
Yeah.
Perfect sync to emotional guidance.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to made me start to think that, well, maybe comedy was like a detour for Jordan Peele. Maybe this is where he should have been.
Well, you feel like he was a guy that's always wanted to make horror movies, but just had to take a day job writing sketch comedy.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. Yeah.
Everybody forgets my early days as a vaudevillian.
That's true. That was Hitchcock. Yep. He started in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Anthony Hopkins.
Yep. Yep. All right. So I saw this documentary that's on Netflix called The Miami Showband Massacre. And I said this before. I love the documentaries that Netflix is making and buying. I mean, they're really cool.
I mean, if you know nothing about the subject matter, it just sounds like, oh, you saw another horror movie.
Yeah. And I knew nothing about this. Mm-hmm. So what happened? The Miami Showband was this Irish band in the 70s that was crazy popular. Everybody called them the Irish Beatles. Mm-hmm. They were so massively famous in Ireland, and they were famous in the North and the South. And in the 70s is the height of what they called the Troubles in Northern Ireland, where the, UVF is a paramilitary organization that is primarily Protestant, and they want Northern Ireland to stay with the Brits. And then there's the IRA, which is they're primarily Catholic, and they want a united Ireland.
It's a religious war added to a territorial battle.
Yeah, or maybe vice versa. It's a territorial battle that kind of becomes a religious thing in that sense. And so this is like the height of like both of these organizations are blowing shit up. Something like close to 4,000 people died during this time. 40 to 50,000 people were wounded. It was brutal. And this band was resonating with both North and South. And at the time, so they lived in Dublin, I believe, and there was these show band, these big show halls, and they would go back and forth. The bands would drive across the border, and they had all this, you know, amazing 16 millimeter footage, you know, of going through the checkpoints and all of this stuff. And there was a big bombing at one of the show halls, like one of the big concert halls. And so it was like, wow, do we keep performing? And they were like, no, man, we're going to keep going. We're going to unite people. And then three of them on the, so they keep performing, and three of them on the way back from a show in the North, their car gets pulled over by British military, and they get killed.
Wow.
The bulk of this documentary is uncovering the cover-up 40 years later. Because the British government, I mean, it's like all this stuff that is tangled in. The British government had MI6 guys working with the UVF, I think they're called.
So it was a kind of spiderwebby conspiracy.
Holy shit. In the midst of this brutal time in Ireland's and England's history. I mean, this was back when the IRA was then was bombing in London. I mean, right, it was like, right. It was nuts.
And the 70s is when it was really, really dawning on the UK that they were losing all of their territory. Mm-hmm. Their empire was disintegrating. It was a conscious recognition in the 70s. That's what led to the big fuck up in the Falklands and all that shit, mm-hmm. you know, and losing ships to that thing. It's just trying to hang on to something somewhere. It was all starting to get a little crumbly after that, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of overreactive and not yep. Ireland, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had already lost the Suez Canal at that point.
Right.
Which was sort of the
beginning. That was a biggie.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end. India had already split, you know, I think at that point. So it was England was really trying to impose its will. And, you know, in the band, there was like five or six guys, and like a couple of them were Protestant, and the rest of them were Catholic. They all got along. One of the surviving members was like, I was raised Catholic, but I was raised to respect the British soldiers and the British, you know, government. We weren't like... Yeah, we're sort
raised
of like,
to be terrorists.
No, we weren't. Yeah. He's like, my family was like, well, we sort of like, sure, we'd like to see Ireland united, but we respect, you know, if I saw a British soldier, I said, oh, good. Like, this guy's trustworthy and honest and, you know. And so it really goes into the whole second and third act are all uncovering the conspiracy up until almost present day trying to really uncover it and everything. And in the 80s and in the 90s when the peace was brokered in Northern Ireland, and then the politics of that, and I mean, you know, who's in what prison, and it's really is really fascinating to watch and to see, and it's like any good documentary, it brings you into a world you might not know anything about. I didn't know anything about this band.
How many people were in the band?
Six altogether.
Now, were there three surviving members? Were they in the documentary?
Two of the surviving members were in the documentary. I think maybe one of the other guys passed away at some point, but three were definitely killed that night.
Mm-hmm.
In 1975.
Wow.
And so it's just like, and it's nuts, man.
With no provocation.
Oh boy, none at all. But it was sort of like, there's a lot of theory swirling around where they, you know, and this is sort of my lefty progressive view. Anytime throughout history someone starts unifying people, boy, they get one between the eyes. Bobby Kennedy, MLK, anybody sometimes starts...
Pussy Riot?
Yeah. anytime somebody starts unifying, it's like, you know? And because a division and two sides fighting is beneficial.
That's why Trump will always be safe.
Yeah. To benefiting people. But in going to the great telepray you wrote that Rick and I were in, you mentioned in it... Mm-hmm. Election cycles, we need the two parties fighting with each other every election cycle because it's good business.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. wars are good business for the defense manufacturers and stuff like that. I mean, if everyone's at peace, oh no, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. We can't have a harmonious
system. Yeah, we can't start making airliners that stay in the air, can
no,
you?
No,
yeah.
No, we can't do that. We can't give safety.
So with all the safety features that you just add on out of ethical...
No, they're going to cost principle. You. They're going to cost you extra.
Extra.
Extras. Fuck extras. Not sunroof, motherfucker.
I know. That's so. It's like it really.
Well, do you want landing gear or don't you?
Yeah.
Let me look at the brochure.
Yeah.
Brakes. Brakes are optional.
Oh, come on, man.
They come with the speaker system.
I'd better get the deluxe. What does the deluxe package have?
Well, if you get clear coat, you get seat belts.
Yes, yeah.
Comes with an undercoat. Cup holder. Wow.
It's heated.
Heated cup holder.
It's a fascinating documentary. It was real. It very much resonated with me. I'm obviously of Irish heritage, but you know, I'm an American. You know, I've never been to Ireland, but you know, my great grandparents came over they're off the boat Irish. And I remember as a kid, my mom and grandmother always talking about the troubles and the IRA and all that stuff, Sinn Féin and England mm-hmm. out of Ireland. I heard a lot of that stuff growing up. And mm-hmm. so to see, like, to learn more about it, the political, how it was going down and how it was for people, and that this band, of course, got caught in, literally got caught in the crosshairs of this is pretty, it's a great documentary. Mm-hmm. It's a really powerful documentary. So check it out.
All right. Well, Graham, we've got our last week of the March Patreon sponsors.
March Patreon, guys.
I think a lot of these people will be back.
You know, folks, and here's how it works with Patreon. If you're thinking about becoming a Patreon member at whatever level, if you get charged the first of the month, so if you want to, you know, get your sponsorship or get your bonus content or whatever, get it done before April 1st, because April 1st we charge everybody. Mm-hmm. So then if you wait till April to become a member, you'd have to wait till May to get your rewards and your whatever else. So so join now. Go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds.
And at the $50 level, you get an ad read every single episode. Like Will Leonard here, his wife Kitty Bagwell is once again riding the MS-150, a fundraising ride that is helping fuel progress toward a world free of MS. She's going to ride from Houston to Austin at the end of April. The money raised will fund amazing progress in MS research, as well as programs and services that ensure people affected by MS can live their best lives. Check her out at willthetd.com/CFN and help her achieve her goal.
And you'll be helping people like MS patient Heather Dowling, who was our guest last week.
Mm-hmm. And Johnny Rulon is promoting his novel Green Cheek, Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel, which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S., our journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website's happyhardshowproductions.com.
I want to live in a supernatural America.
You think you don't?
Yes. Yes, we're all just familiars for the sorcerers.
I know you from somewhere.
I can't put my magical finger on it.
Only Chris Mancini would come up with the sentence, familiars for the sorcerer. Let us not forget, we are in a garage riddled with gargoyle statues all over the place. That's nice to be back here so they can speak through Chris Mancini for him to say stuff like that.
They were getting frustrated. They weren't being heard. So Fanboy Planet is a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out them out for comic news, movie news, TV news, and interviews with industry insiders and artists. Fanboyplanet.com, fanboyplanet.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. coffeeoversuicide.com.
It's a good subject to talk about, guys. And, you know, it's with Brody Stevens taking his life, I think we need to have just more discussions about mental illness and talking about suicide, because if this, like, oh, don't talk about it, it's the stigma, I think it builds it up. And I think a show like this, Coffee Over Suicide, is like...
Yeah, you got to all realize depressed people are private people.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's one of the big things is not seeing others.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be faced with it. And so the thinking you can just waltz in with an intervention on that, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a fundraiser tomorrow at, I don't know when this is airing. When is it going?
That's today.
It'll air today.
Okay, good. Tomorrow I'm going to be at Flappers. And Mike Burton is putting on a fundraiser to help with the mental health.
Oh, fantastic.
And that'll be the 27th.
On the 27th, sure that's it. At Flappers at 8. I'm on the lineup with some great folks, so check it out, flappers.com.
And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Check out alicefrazier.com, alicefrazier.com.
Thanks, Alice.
And Rebecca Evans, The Art Podcast. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves. We find our own art in life. You want to hear some cool stories and get inspired? Check out The Art, facebook.com/TheArtPodcast.
Yeah.
And La Calavera by Alan Ross, the story of a pirate radio operator, decides to go into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of a spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, gear up to take on the world's largest media conglomerate, and it's an egomaniacal celebrity CEO. It's on Amazon, an ebook and hard copy. Check it out.
I'm getting close to finishing. It's a good book. Check it out. Just for Dick Nixon saying shitty things to this guy. Just with that alone is worth it for me.
So, all right. So, should we go right to DVDs, or you want to hit a couple trailers?
We didn't think this one part through, did we?
Yeah.
We're not in the studio. Usually we have the screen up.
Yeah, we usually have Aaron take care of it. So we could skip it this week. All right.
We'll get to it.
So we'll talk about trailers next week. DVD and Blu-rays, we have Aquaman came out. Again, a weird release schedule for DVDs. Like, some movies come out like months after they're in the theater, and other ones take like forever. Like Aquaman,
some come out weeks after they
came out.
The joke I used to say is, you know, your movie's in trouble when it's playing on the airliner on the way to the premiere,
right? and it, like, if Beale Street Could Talk, I mean, that was a long time ago. Yeah.
But it's interesting. That one makes more sense to me because Beale Street was. It was released a long time ago, but it was really, they pushed that thing to get Oscars, nominations. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense to me that they're like, well, now is the time to do DVDs to get people.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you have to leave clearance for screener DVDs.
Yeah.
You can't release the same time the screeners are out. You know, mm-hmm. There's a whole separate timing for those two different things without the stamp on them. And, you know, it's expanded media has really rearranged the schedule and timetable.
And Aquaman, you know, we talked about this when the movie came out. This movie really benefited from low expectations. It wasn't a great movie, but it was one of the second best DC movie released in a very long time.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This goodwill is going to go away. You know, after we have a few decent movies to get, you know, the Zack Snyder, you know, wrong turn, you know, out of the schedule, we're going to start judging these movies on their own merit.
And watch out for superhero traffic jam movies.
I know.
Who doesn't get enough time on the screen and who's, you know, and it's all fighting something that goes boom into a wall and gets right the fuck up again. Yeah. And runs into the fight again. So no impact ever means anything ever. And we're numbing out to impact into it because mostly you're just destroying our buildings and shit. You're just destroying our property, and you're all fucking fine.
I know. It's as much as I love these superhero movies, I am starting
to...
starting to go, all right, another big thing.
Well, we don't need three Marvel movies in 1 year. We don't. You know, one or two at the most. I mean, make these more special occasion events. But, you know, if you've got three Marvel movies, you know, one or two X-Men movies, and then you've got like a couple DC movies, you're like literally getting a superhero movie every like 2 months. Like, it's too many, you know, and then that's not including all the superhero TV shows that are, you know, all over the airwaves now. Like,
that's what burnt vampires out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They
werewolves and zombies. Yeah. Your zombie does out. Your this does out. Your that does out.
Got to milk every single drop of blood from you know, anything successful and good until no one wants it anymore.
Ever.
Yeah, saturate us until we hate chocolate.
So, you know, Aquaman, honestly, was a vast improvement from what was going on, but it still wasn't an amazing movie. It was okay. Popcorny.
It's too busy at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a visual masterpiece.
And at the beginning and at the middle, it was too busy.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. And there's just more doesn't always fix it.
No.
More TIE fighters and X-Wings doesn't always fix it.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice to see every visual effects artist on the planet get work on one film. But, you know, it might have been a little much.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into it too much, but there was crazy scenes like, why is Aquaman on a boat? That makes no sense. Why is he on a boat? Why does he need a boat to get out into the ocean? Oh, now he's jumping in the water. Okay, well, clearly the boat is also slower, so that made no sense that he was in this boat. Other than
lot of my stuff is on. I have my DVDs and stuff on there.
Other than to have a conversation.
I have my charger. I keep my charger on there and my phone.
Now,
my iPad, it's got a bunch of movies on it. I can't take it underwater.
My whole world's on that. My whole world's on that thing.
And oh, then the other
I got to learn about this cloud thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I trust it, though. Then everything, yeah. then the cloud can just
then come. Then Apple's got all my private thoughts.
Yeah, and then they come right. steal it. Like, the NSA is tapped into iCloud. You know it.
Got my new eye gills.
Yeah.
Stockholm has a conspiracy theorist.
So,
this is Jesse Ventura. And here's my guest.
So, did you see Aquaman?
Yep.
Okay. Now
they left so much of the book out.
Well, now if Sean Connery had seen Aquaman, what would he have thought of it?
Where's the Nautilus? You know that piece of shit that ruined my film career? Start the car.
I was wondering which one of us was going to ask for Sean Connery first.
Yes, at least the character came back from the dead.
Where is Sean? Is his health okay?
He's in Spain, I think, or maybe he's back in England or Scotland now, but he's back over there. His health is fine, I think. He's just... old guy duffing around in his kilt now, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't give a shit who thinks what about what.
God, I bet you you know there's days he goes, you know, I'd just like to get into a fight. I hope somebody pops off. You know, like, you know he's just looking to just knock a guy out.
Well, there's that story about him when he's a young guy and a bunch of fellas wanted his jacket and he knocked out six guys in a street fight.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So he was sort of a knock you out kind of guy, you know. James Garner had a dash of it, but he reserved it for certain assholes, you know.
Right.
Kind of Connery just left it open. He was a free range fist, you know.
I love that.
Give him the Adam Butter kiss. Donk. Boink. That's why he's bald. Yeah. Ba-da, gonk.
Well, who was it? Matthew Broderick, when he was on Inside the Actor's Mind, was talking about when he worked on The Freshman. Or no, on the movie he did with Sean Connery and they were the family job or they were all... in
Italian Job?
No, and Dustin Hoffman. They were all generations of criminals.
Yeah, she played... he was trying to play a gangster guy.
Yeah.
So he's working past his Scottish to use the soft R's for the gangster.
Yeah.
It's hard when you come out of years of never having your dialect challenged.
And
he wasn't Sellers, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Matthew Broderick told these stories that he was like, you know, Sean Connery on the set, he was all man, and he was a real, like, ball buster. And one day on the set, Matthew Broderick's like, oh, Mr. Connery, there's a friend of mine, and we went to high school together. And he goes, you went to high school? Did you graduate? Like, he was always just busting his butt.
Needling at him, right? Giving him shit.
Constantly. I was like, that would be fantastic. Just have Sean Connery just riding.
Busting your balls.
All fucking
entire film.
Follows you home, yelling at you.
Until...
You call that a car?
He's a bully. He's actually just a bully chasing him down the street at the end. Oh, what are you going to cry, you little baby?
Why didn't you call your agent? You know, just...
So, all right, next movie. Stan and Ollie. Now, this movie I actually really wanted to see. I heard it was good.
It had
so
very limited release. It wasn't
very
out
limited.
Long.
I wanted to see it. Now I'm going to wait till iTunes has it, and I'll just see it there.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of that.
And second act, this is the Jennifer Lopez movie. Do people still go see Jennifer Lopez movies?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't.
I'm going to look that movie up.
I'm not sure how it
works. She was the rom-com queen for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean... there must be a residual audience for that, don't you think?
There has to be.
Yeah.
Just enough people.
Two decades is...
So, yeah. And I want to mention that this is the final week for some of this merchandise in the store. Then it will be... Oh, go ahead.
They made that movie for $16 million, and its cumulative worldwide gross was $51
million. But, you know, you add in marketing costs, and it might have been a wash.
Well, I wonder...
Studio wash is when they made only four times the budget.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of 100.
Yeah, it wasn't a big of a...
The days of Easy Rider are
I mean, technically...
Gone. A budget to profit era, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure technically that movie didn't make any money, but in reality it probably did. Yeah.
It absolutely did. Yeah, they were like, it was beneficial for them. And so I bet you that's why they, to answer your question, she's willing to make a movie where the total budget is $16 million. It brings home $50 just because she's an international star.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll keep cranking those out.
Yeah, for sure. She'll make
she's not coming in going, I need to do a $100 million movie. They won't give her that. Mm-mm. But she does this between American Idols and...
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Go for it.
Long may you run.
I know. Mm-hmm. I would do it.
God, yes.
I'd bump into walls and snort and pretend I was awkward on a date or whatever I needed to do.
And also, I think she's judging dance now.
Oh, good.
Whatever that
is. Oh, sure, yeah. Dancing with the Stars, is it?
Or whatever, Dance US.
You think you can dance?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's that one.
Dance Squad.
Yeah, it's...
dance your ass off.
Dance Patrol. Spring Break Dance-a-thon.
Dance, shut up. That's it.
Dance.
Dance, motherfucker, on VH1.
So,
how would Sean Connery judge that dancing competition?
Dance. It's electronic. Sean Connery. Wick, dance. I have other impressions, you know, guys.
Who else?
Not to us.
Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's hear Harrison. Well,
now, if Harrison Ford was watching Second Act, what would he think?
I'd be wondering what happened to the first act. Yeah. Yeah, wake me up when the first act starts again. And close the door, you're letting all the smoke out.
Yeah, I'm actually watching Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom with my son right now. So we're like halfway through, and it's so fun to watch.
Yeah. Does he like Temple of Doom?
So, not as much as the first one, but you know what's weird? When we were kids, like watching that guy get his heart ripped out was like, terrifying, I remember, but didn't bother him at all because it looks fake. I'm like, well, yeah, because you're used to, you know, giant CG special effects, right, and aliens and superheroes flying through buildings, and but now just a fake
savvy
practical
kids
effect
don't
of
care about rubber stuff.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, that looks like latex. It doesn't.
Yeah, it was terrifying to us.
Yeah, they don't process
it. It goes back to us. Mm-hmm. Visuals, one third of it.
Mm-hmm.
Implication was one third. And acting was one third. Yeah. It's the same thing that Jordan Peele understands, is just showing reaction to things. Mm-hmm. Looks on faces as indicators for how we should be feeling.
Yeah.
It's the same thing Blair Witch did.
Mm-hmm.
It was just aim the camera at your reactions to everything and let the acting out, you know?
Right. And also, too, like going back to what Jordan Peele is good at and what he just in Us and Get Out is, showing the reaction, just hearing something, not quite sure what it is, seeing the reaction, and then having some creepy music around it.
Yeah, that's and plucking strings.
Yeah, yes, just
very boom, smart. Using string, very smart. String can't fail if you use them right. They are the right guide. You use it, a trumpet just doesn't work there. What? Fuck. Cut.
So, I wanted to mention for the store, this is our last week where we're getting liquidating a lot of merchandise. A lot of you have been picking up some Dana Gould stuff. Like, we actually had a couple of LPs go out. So, some of you collectors are scooping up the LPs because this is the only place you can get them. And this is the last week, and you can get 20% off all Dana Gould merch. Use the coupon code Dana, and you get a free T-shirt with every T-shirt while supplies last. It might be an LA Podfest. Who knows what it could be? Oh, whatever we have in the garage.
There's
that's
a lot
extra
of bonus bit babies in there.
Alice and Rosen merch, Snuggle, you get 20% off. And Jackie Cation, 20% off with the coupon code DORK. And we keep threatening that we're going to be redoing Patreon because we want all you guys to become members. We will be doing that in the next week or two for sure. And premiering this week, Dumbo. The live-action Dumbo with a very interesting above-the-line in Dumbo. With you've got Tim Burton directing, you've got Danny DeVito, you've got like a bunch of stars in this movie. But I'm watching the trailers, and I think there's a disconnect somewhere. My family really wants to see it. Both kids and my wife think it looks really fun and interesting. This is not doing anything for me. I'm not sure. Yeah. So, but I will be seeing it this weekend. So we'll see if, see how it is. I'm always leery with Tim Burton doing remakes because his track record is abysmal. And I love him as a filmmaker, but I only like when he does originals. And, but his, everything from Planet of the Apes to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, they're unwatchable movies. The Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows.
I don't know. I
keep thinking him and Johnny Depp together. They're not always together.
I saw another Dumbo trailer and I was like, I feel the same way. I'm so on the fence. I'm like, this could be cool. I don't know. I can't get a beat on that film if it's going to be good or not.
Yeah, I don't know. So we'll see. Because the thing about it is like they're deliberately cutting the trailers where. You don't know. They're not really giving any information.
All right.
So we'll see. And then the next movie is the Beach Bum, which is some weird
Matthew McConaughey and Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, some stoner comedy that just kind of came out of nowhere. I've heard nothing about this movie, and it just showed up.
It's like when he did that Surfer Dude movie a couple like 7-8 years ago. I don't know. It's pretty.
I love the storyline. Read the storyline. It's like written by an intern.
A rebellious stoner named Moondog lives by his own rules. That sounds like this is going to be miserable.
Could you itemize those rules for us in advance? And do they involve us?
Yeah.
Any of these rules?
Is it just an excuse for him to just go, hey, man, just...
And get paid for it? Yeah, for sure.
I feel like...
All right. That's what he started as. He broke as a stoner in Dazed and Confused. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like maybe what they did is they just took outtakes from Dazed and Confused and some of the Lincoln commercials. And they just cut them.
So he's just driving really slowly.
Yeah. Talking to a bull and then jumping into a pool in a tuxedo and just out of his fucking mind.
And then he's just driving all wet.
Yeah. It's not about hugging trees. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah. You got to drive with your mind.
Yeah, no.
Toonces. It's like Toonces the cat.
I feel like him and Snoop just wanted to hang out at the pool and smoke weed, and they decided to get a budget and shoot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is going to be
really
horrible.
What it feels like. Yeah.
But I feel like I need to see
we'll
it.
See it. We're going
to
see it.
All right. Well, there's only two to choose from this weekend, so we'll...
I'm not going to see Dumbo. You're going to see that.
Yeah, I know.
And, so I'll be...
I think it's safe to say I want to see neither of these films, but...
I'm going
to
get a midnight screening of Beach Bum. I'm going to wait in line because I'm sure there's going to be a high demand.
Yeah. You have to get in advance. Yep.
They can hire a guy to stand there for you.
Yeah. Maybe you get a VIP ticket, get a free bong. Oh my gosh, that is our show.
That's our show, guys.
Well, it just flew by like a bullet train that ain't gonna happen.
Come on. Halfway to 9:20.
Yes.
Oh, you have dogs. That's so great. Looks like Rick Overton let the dogs out, everybody. Mm-hmm. Wow. That was fantastic. Your reaction was more exciting for me than the actual dog barking.
It looks like you have a phone and then a booster phone.
You have two phones talking to each other.
That's a battery from Mophie.
Mm.
It's an added battery. You can clip on the end. So if you're on a movie set or a TV set and there's nowhere to plug in and your location or something like that, your phone doesn't drop dead halfway through the day and you're... wherever your trailer's parked in the mud. And
nice.
Then they drag you in a van off to the location. There's no electrical, nothing. I want to get a solar one, so even when I'm out there...
Well, they're either taking you to a set or throwing you in a swamp.
One or the other.
What you just described.
That's it. That's one or the other.
Yeah.
And to make sure that there's lots of wasps and bees around lunch on the tables outside. That's the other really important part to have.
Cover the food in honey.
Yeah.
And the children.
So, Rick, where can people find you online and what do you got coming up?
Well, coming up, I'm going to be at Flappers tomorrow night doing the show along with Mike Burton. And this will be a benefit to help an organization that works with helping comedians out when they're having a tough time. And so it's a good cause. And I'm coming up on, I think, April 9, I'm going to be on Mom. Is it called Mom? And I was just on Drunk History.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun one. And that's about the news for right now.
Outstanding.
Excellent.
Yeah, guys, go to flappers.com for March 27th. That's a great March fundraiser. Right, they've done these, you know, they did one, Sam Tripoli organized one at the Comedy Store. I believe they did one at the Laugh Factory. So it's their, really the clubs are giving comedians, basically, these organizations give comedians free, like, psychologists access to, so if anyone's, because we get very isolated as comics, and I think we're more susceptible to this type of depression and stuff like that. So it's a great show, and you're gonna help out comics, so check that out. I will be Progressive Comedy Tour. Ron Placone and I are going to Texas April 12th through the 15th. We're going to Fort Worth, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin, Texas, April 18th, doing a political vigilante live at the Sycamore Tavern. And, you know, my crazy YouTube left-wing ramblings, political vigilante. So just get all of that at grahamelwood.com.
I went to your channel once, and I just I remember you saying once, like, you know, sometimes when we get passionate comments on CFN, you're like, they're nothing like what we get in the political space. And I checked.
Passionate's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. And I checked, like, your site just to see, and you weren't kidding. But the one that made me laugh the most is somebody was mad that you liked Batman. Like that.
Well, that's my favorite. It's just like, that's like,
that's what you're going to be upset about? Really? That's what you're going to choose to
talking really? About the Green New Deal and corporate money out of politics and ending war. Like
Batman? But how dare you, sir?
Let's get mad at Batman.
Yeah. So also, New Conversations from the Abyss is out with the Sklar brothers, the two brothers that carry a sibling rivalry to a unusual conclusion. And also, we've got three more episodes to drop that'll include Rick Overton, Janet Varney, Annie Savage, Bill Dwyer, Carrie Barrett, and Hal Lublin, and Mark Agliardi. So a lot of really cool people from Thrilling Adventure Hour and some other shows that will be coming up. And also, Long Ago and Far Away, the graphic novel, is available in the store, signed, and it will be available digitally from Starburns Press starting next month.
That's our episode. Rick Overton, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come from your hornet's nest swamp to join us.
I must get back to them.
Yeah.
They're dying off.
Yeah. When you go home, do you sing Rainbow Connection on a log?
I'm going to start.
Yeah.
Thanks for this. Thanks for planting that in my head.
Yeah.
That's our show, everybody. We really appreciate you listening to us every week. Like, share these audio on your social media, anything that can help us get more fans. Go to Patreon, all those great ways to support the show. Positive comments on the iTunes, great ways to support the show. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.